Welcome to the shed.
So today in the shed, I'm joined by Daryl Anker, who for 30 plus years has had the ability to put himself into a state of mind where he is able to channel another entity called, or as people call him, Bashar, which means messenger. Whether you believe what is happening to be true, the information and knowledge I've digested over the years has resonated with myself and many others with a huge following, gravitating towards Bashar and Daniel Anker's work. So get ready for a highly thought-provoking episode and welcome to the shed, Daryl. I hope I got everything right there for you. I'm sure you can let me know.
I've been channeling now for 40 years.
40 years. Yeah. Okay. That's why I thought be safe and put plus.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
No, it's brilliant. I mean, I'm really, Bashar sort of came to my attention through sort of TikTok and things that are going through viral through there. And I just found the interactions that when you're channeling and Bashar has with people is just so fascinating. And the information that comes across is something I haven't been able to find. And I sort of listen to philosophy and Alan Watts and Terence McKenna and loads of different people. So I'm always searching for new information. But just to start off, to give sort of my listeners and myself, the sort of history of this 40-year process you've gone through, what led you to meeting Bashar and this journey starting?
Well, in 1973, I had two very close broad daylight UFO sightings a week apart of a black equilateral triangular craft. And that sort of opened my eyes to the idea that obviously these things existed. And I started, doing research to find out more. And over the years, I came across other books on spirituality, metaphysics, and UFOs, and so on and so forth, including books on channeling, primarily from Jane Roberts and Seth, for those that are familiar with that material. But 10 years after the sighting, I was introduced to a channel who was doing seminars. And I went to listen for several months, and I thought the information was good and very applicable to one's life to make changes in a positive way. But eventually the entity coming through that channel offered to actually teach a channeling class. And I was kind of like, well, I didn't think this could be taught. I thought it was just sort of something that happened to you out of the blue if you were going to be someone to do this.
Yeah.
That there was no setup for it. But I went into the class not because I thought I was going to become a channel. I just wanted to do more research and see how something like this would actually be taught to people. And it was a series of guided meditations to relax you, and wasn't expected that you had to actually channel anything other than more of yourself, can make a connection to your own higher consciousness or maybe a spirit guide or something like that. But it was a 12-week course. And about halfway through the course, while the class was under a guided meditation, I just suddenly received, almost like somebody just sort of shoved a file into my brain, all this information just opened up and flooded into my head about who Bashar was, about the UFO sighting being shown to me on purpose to get me to start learning what I needed to learn, the agreement I had made before this life with him to do this. And that was just all there in a flash of a second. I hadn't said anything to anyone, but the minute that happened in my head, the entity coming through the channel teaching the class stopped talking and turned right to me and said, "There's an entity here for you right now, if you're ready." And I opened my eyes and I looked around because I was kind of surprised by this. And I saw that in the row behind me, one of the other classmates had also received the same image of Bashar that I had seen in my head. And she was actually sketching his face on a piece of paper. So I already had two outside validations that this wasn't just my imagination or a hallucination or anything, that something real was happening. And I decided, okay, this is worth exploring. I kept practicing. The teacher offered me the opportunity to co-channel with him in the next series of classes, so I could get more practice. And eventually a woman came along that wanted to do a doctoral thesis on the connection between psychology and channeling. And I became one of her subjects. I would go to her house, channel for her friends. She would take her notes and write her paper. Well, the first week there were a few friends, and then word spread. The next week there were double that, and the next week there was double that. And so, as word spread of Bashar's information, and people were making recordings and copies of this and handing them out, one thing just kind of led to another. I started getting invited to do this more often. I started getting invited to different cities and then different countries. And here I am 40 years later, still doing this.
It's amazing. And where you said that the entity came through when you was in a channeling class, does that mean the person that was channeling then was could also channel too, or it came through, he wasn't channeling another entity at that point, it was just the flash up?
He was channeling another entity. Bashar just sort of opened up in my head, and that's why the entity said, "There's an entity here for you if you are ready to begin." So no, he was channeling something completely different.
And was this, now I feel we're in a sort of time where reality is changing a little bit. We're sort of opening up to, aliens are real, or, it's coming into a world where our perception is changing a bit more. Was this a really difficult sort of time in the 70s to be involved in something like UFOs, because obviously people might not have as further understanding as they have now?
Yeah, well, I mean, the channeling began in the early 80s, and still there's a lot of, that's not real, you're nuts, that's a crazy idea. I mean, people were starting to open up to the idea that yes, there might be life out in the universe, but certainly, not the idea that they could be here, and not the idea that they could speak through a person or anything like that. So yeah, it wasn't something that you would talk about in polite company, as they say. But I did find out that it was kind of one of those secrets that everybody knows, or so a lot of people knew more than I thought, because one day I would go to these seminars. I would do them on a regular basis once I started channeling publicly, and one of my coworkers one day was is sort of like going, "Well, where do you disappear to every Thursday, at a certain hour?" And I kind of like, okay, here we go. How do I explain this? And I just sort of started to describe what the process was. And she just said, oh, you're a channel. And I go, how do you know that? And you go, oh, my mother's been channeling for years. So it was just kind of like, okay, there's instant understanding and acceptance there. And over the course of the channeling, and even in the beginning, I never really found that much resistance, because I only seemed to attract the people who were interested in hearing the information. And like you said, and like I've said to many people, you don't have to believe that Bashar is an extraterrestrial entity. You don't have to believe this is a telepathic contact. The information kind of speaks for itself. It offers a very different perspective than what we normally think how life works. And when people do apply the information in their lives, it does make positive changes. So the feedback I get from people shows me that the information is real. And therefore, it doesn't really matter to me whether or not they believe that Bashar is real, or whether this is just another level of my own consciousness connecting to something to bring this information through. It's not about the messenger, it's about the message.
Yeah, of course. And just for, I mean, my listeners, could you go into sort of detail what exactly channeling is, like the process of it? I know you go into a gamma state, but to try and simplify it a little bit for a newbie.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an altered state. It's a true altered state in the brain, and it goes to a particular frequency, like you said, gamma, which is between 40 and 100 cycles per second, or hertz in the brain, I believe. And in that state, we seem capable of making different connections, higher level associations, and higher level perspectives that synthesize information in a different way. So it's about getting into that state. Now, we all do that. It's what people call being in the zone, or when you do something you're absolutely loving to do, and it seems like you don't pay attention to the passage of time, and it feels like 15 minutes, and you look up and it's been 2 hours.
I feel like that when I do pods.
Exactly. So we all get into that state, and in that state we're, more creative, more associations are made in the brain. Like I said, different perspectives come through. So we all go into a channeling state when we do what we love to do, when we're in that zone. It's just that I guess that different people can use it in different ways if you are in some way, shape, or form trained or directed to focus on it in a certain way and get used to going into that state all the time, then you can kind of connect deliberately to certain states of expression and creativity to bring through more specifically what it is you're interested in bringing through.
Mm.
I hope that explains it.
Yeah. No, amazing. And how does, how does it work between when you put yourself into this state and an entity arrives, or how does that work? How do you know you're in that frequency and that you can allow something like that to happen?
Well, it takes practice. It took me about 2 years before I truly could tell the difference between my own thoughts and connecting to something on a higher level. Again, whether it was my own higher self or Bashar or whatever, you begin to feel the difference. It's like anything. You practice the piano, you get better at it. Mm-hmm. So the more you practice, the more you do it, the more you're able to sort of discern the frequencies and you can dial it in a little bit. At this point, even though in the beginning I sort of did a relaxation exercise and letting go of certain emotions and things like that and balancing myself to get into that state, after 40 years, it's just kind of an automatic thing. I know what the state feels like and I can just let go and let it happen and make the connection. The connection, the link is always there. There's not always information coming through on it, but it is always there. So I can recognize what that state feels like now just instinctively and just let myself fall into it. In fact, yeah. if the few times I've gone to see other channels, that vibration comes off of them and I actually have to hold myself out of that state or I just automatically fall into it.
Yeah. Okay. When you're around that energy as well, I guess. Yeah.
It's very inducive to just sort of slipping into that stream.
Mm. And when you're in that state, is it sort of like a hypnosis or sort of, are you aware of everything that's going on or what's coming through you?
I'm aware there's something happening and it's not like I'm unconscious, but I'm conscious of other things. It's a very collapsed experience in terms of time. I don't experience the passage of time in the same way. Like I can do, a 2-hour session and I can come out of it and feel like I've just been there for maybe 20 to 30 minutes. That's what it feels like. And I get images, I get feelings, I get symbolic representations sometimes of, I guess, what he's talking about with mm-hmm. someone. But it's highly collapsed, highly symbolic. I get patterns of energy and things like that. And I can't really, what I'm getting is so much more powerful than the translation that's mm-hmm. coming through me into language, because I'm just acting as a translation device, basically, for lack of a better term, a telephone, to allow his thoughts that are connecting to me telepathically to be translated into the language that I was raised to understand, which is English. So I'm experiencing the initial stream of that telepathic connection vibrationally, and I don't really have the ability to pay attention to the words, because if I really listened, the channeling would stop. I'd be mm-hmm. using my logical brain too much to try and figure out what's going on.
You would
on.
Leave that state in a certain way.
Yeah. So yeah. I kind of sometimes explain that it feels like I'm standing under a pounding waterfall of energy. And it's so overwhelming that that's what grabs my attention is this stream. You, when Bashar's talking to someone, you get the spray. So it's so secondary. It's almost like the conversation might be happening, in another room or in another house or something like that, because it's just so much in the background of what I'm experiencing that I just can't break from it, or I don't choose to break from it, because mm-hmm. I'm getting a lot of input. I can even have a separate conversation with him while he's talking to someone else. So it's much more interesting for me to stay in that state and just know after, years of doing this, that the people are getting the translations and mm. the delivery and the dialogue they need while I'm getting what I need on a different level.
So while you're actually channeling him and he's having a conversation with someone else, you can have a conversation with him at the same time. That's mad. Yeah.
That's I can ask my own questions. I can explore my own things and he'll answer me, because his consciousness is multidimensional. It's not mm. linear in the same way ours is.
Yeah, that's a mind blow to me. Yeah, that's unbelievable. And with channeling, is there any sort of dangers towards it?
I don't think so. I learned early on in my studies that, if you're going to go into this in fear, you're going to really just sort of wind up bringing through your own negative beliefs, your own doubts and fears. And channeling is a very connective, higher vibrational idea. And in that vibrational state, you don't really attract anything negative. It's just not compatible with the frequency that you're on when you get into that gamma state. So I understood early on that by definition, the channeling state itself can really only connect to positive information and energy. The idea of bringing something negative through is usually your own inner demons that are being expressed by someone who's not really in that higher vibrational state at that point for one reason or another.
What kind of lifestyle, you know, do you have to put yourself in a position of, you know, a frequency of love all the time to be able to channel someone of an entity of that? Or do you have to, you know, do you have to be good all the time?
I mean, you know, I'm human. I make mistakes. I can get into moods. Although certainly after channeling him for 40 years, I'm less likely to choose to do that because I understand that's not only to someone else's detriment, it's to my detriment to go into those lower vibrations as well. While you're channeling, yes, you have to be in that state. But, you know, I'm on Earth like everyone else here, and I get exposed to things and I can have certain reactions. But again, they've lessened over time to the point now where I've learned to look at them more neutrally, to understand that things are happening for a reason and I can get out of it what I need to get out of it and maybe even respond in a more positive way that allows another person or a situation to also come out with a positive outcome. So you get better at it. But you know, as long as you're in the proper state when you're bringing the channeling through, it kind of helps you sort of let go of all of that stuff. Because like in the beginning, I could feel myself when I'm going into the channeling state, going through almost like a spectrum of emotions, you know, from sadness to fear, to anger, it was almost like I had to let go of this. And get truly into a neutral state, and then you can go into a higher state. So over time, experiencing that letting go of those sort of, you know,
attachments,
darker emotions to those things, and understanding the reasons why I would hold on to that, and then finding there was no reason to do so, that it was nonsensical to do so, it didn't benefit me to do so. Then over time, yeah, you let go of that more and more and more until your life really changes in a way where you kind of approach things much more positively, or at least much more neutrally.
No, brilliant. And going into now to amazing journey, just to stop there as well, though. But going into who Bashar is and your sort of first meeting with him when that came around, how was that for you? And what went down, basically?
Well, again, Bashar presents himself. I have to let the entity present itself the way that it does for this to work for me. So again, not that you have to believe it, but Bashar does present himself as an extraterrestrial consciousness. They do have a physicality. This is a telepathic connection. And basically, he's explained that he is, in his society, what they call a first contact specialist. So they make connections with worlds that they believe are on the brink of understanding that there's more life in the universe than just themselves, and that are preparing to be ready to meet other beings from other planets. And he sends this information through when he connects with a receptive person to give people an opportunity to understand that if they apply the information in the way that he's describing it, it actually ups their vibration and makes them more vibrationally compatible with the possibility of open contact with extraterrestrial beings. So this is one of the things he does, is communicates to different planets that are ready for contact or preparing to be ready for contact, and dispenses this information so that whoever chooses to adopt it and apply it in their lives can actually become more attuned to their vibration and more capable of meeting beings from other worlds. So this is how we basically explained what he does and why he's doing it.
And then how did sort of you two sort of combine and do your first channel together? Was that?
Well, it was in the class. It was in the class when I brought him through. Now, at first, his energy was a lot for me to handle. And I actually channeled another entity from his society, a female, who we referred to as anima, because that's the word that means feminine energy coming through a man. Because they don't have names in their society. They're telepathic. They don't really have names in the way that we do. So they just recognize each other by frequency. But we needed names. And the word Bashar was an Arabic word that means messenger. Part of my background is Middle Eastern. So I think that's why that was chosen. Although I don't speak the language, I had no idea what Bashar meant until someone told me what it meant. So somehow he plucked that out of, you know, the air and let us use that word because he knew we needed to call him something. And this, the same thing with the female anima. And she was easier to take. And she gave me the practice of getting used to the higher energy. And then he would take over, you know, and more and more and more in terms of being the spokesperson. So she kind of like was his warm up act, and then he could come in when I was more capable of handling his energy, which was in certain ways much stronger, I think, because we have a stronger bond or connection. It's almost like, I'm just going to put it this way. It's almost like we're the same soul in two different time periods and two different places. So because of the strength of that connection, it was a little bit tougher for me to handle. I was getting more of their energy than I got with her because she wasn't connected to me in the same way. Mm-hmm. So after practicing with her a bit, then he would come through and I could handle when I let go of, again, fear and doubt and things like that. I made my neurological system more conductive to that higher frequency. And then after, like I said, about 2 years, I stopped having any kind of negative symptoms where, you know, things would be a little bit painful or I would feel like I was getting sick before the channeling, because that was all about clearing out all of those negative ideas and negative definitions and just letting the energy flow. And once I did that, I started to feel buoyed up, you know, and supported. And then instead of being tired at the end of the channeling, I was actually left with more energy and more balance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw on the documentary on you that it sort of goes through his life, how it was, and that they're sort of the entities that they were got so enwrapped in technology.
Talking about the Greys.
Yeah. Was that through the documentary, or was that what he was, the Greys, or was he?
Well, no, he, okay. It's a long story. A lot of people have had experiences with the Greys in what are called alien abductions and all this.
Mm.
The way Bashar explains it is, you know, there's a lot of different parallel versions of Earth that coexist with our version at the same time, parallel realities. His story is that the Greys used to be humans on a parallel version of Earth. They were technologically advanced, but they were spiritually not that advanced. And they did a lot of things that we're doing to our own planet to actually undermine the ecological system of their version of Earth. They destroyed it to the point where ecosystems started collapsing, where they polluted themselves so much that they could no longer reproduce. They had to go underground to protect themselves. They had to actually genetically mutate themselves to be able to survive to a certain point. But they knew that they were dying out because they had passed that point of no return. So they collectively had to create an advanced technology that would allow them to shift into parallel versions of Earth where human DNA was still viable. Take that DNA and create hybrid beings between the Greys and viable humans that would allow their society to survive, to perpetuate their culture. That's what Bashar's culture is, and several other hybrid cultures, is the result of the process of the Greys attempting to survive, to perpetuate their culture by creating a hybrid between themselves as they were and viable humans as we are and in other parallel realities are. So now the hybrids like Bashar civilization that have been created are saying, okay, kind of like, thank you for our existence. And we're helping you by giving you this information to make sure you don't go down the same path and destroy your version of Earth in the way that the Greys did, because that's what happened to them and they're dying out. But now the hybrids are the continuation of their species, of their culture, but they're also the ones that are now more balanced because they've learned that that's necessary in order to really have a positive reality. So they're giving us the benefit of what happened to them by sharing this information with us and hopefully preventing us from going down the same dark path and destroying our version of Earth too.
Yeah, because we have quite similarities at the minute. I mean, with AI now and technology going in the way that it is, I think there is a sort of shift whether we're going to go one way or the other. Are there many channelers sort of, you know, or many entities like Bashar would, I guess that's his mission then in a sense, as an operative to give this information and put us on the right path?
But it's up to us, of course, to take the information.
To do it, to take the action, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there are other entities from his civilization and other entities from other civilizations as well that may be coming through other people. I'm the only one he comes through specifically, but there are other members of his society that might be making connections with other humans on Earth too.
And with the sense of channeling as a contact, is there sort of a is there a process that we're going towards where we're going to have more contact, more of a physical contact or seeing contact? Is that something that we need to lead ourselves to?
Yes. I mean, I think that's the whole point of kind of what this awakening is kind of all about, not only for our own benefit, but also to help us expand our understanding that we're not alone. We have a galactic family, so to speak, that we can join that will really help expand human society and help us evolve further. So, again, we're being offered the opportunity and an invitation to join all of those beings out there that have our best interests at heart. But again, they're leaving it up to us. This is one of the reasons why the channeling happens in the way that it does, because basically he just wants to see what are we going to do with the information. It's not about believing that he's real or forcing us into a face-to-face contact before we're ready for it, because we have to accept the information and apply the information for its own sake, for them to know we're truly ready to meet them, because a lot of them operate on such a high vibrational level that it would actually be difficult at our present state to interact with them physically. He has actually said that the reason they stay in the background and just let us focus on the information is if it's not true for necessarily all extraterrestrial species, but from Bashar's point of view, they operate on such a high frequency that being exposed to that frequency would kind of force all of our fear-based beliefs to the surface and possibly put us into psychotic shock if we're not ready to integrate all of that stuff. So he stays at arm's length, watching and waiting and seeing how we change our vibration and make ourselves more compatible to be able to interact with their vibration. Because he was kind of using the analogy of saying, well, you know, you're operating a low vibration. It's like a very low spinning gear. They operate on a high frequency and it's like a very fast gear. And if you jam those gears together, you'll strip the gears. So they have to wait until we ramp up a bit so that we're more in mesh with their gear. And there's compatibility that can be shared back and forth. So they're taking their time. They're not pushing anything. They don't have an agenda in that sense. It's truly our world and it's truly up to us to decide if and when we're ready for such a thing. But he has said that the window of open contact, the probability does increase between 2023 and 2033, and that he has recently said there's probably going to be some major contact exposure or event somewhere around 26 and 27. He rarely makes a prediction unless he feels there's so much momentum and energy behind it, it's unlikely to change, that it has a really high probability. So somewhere in the next decade or so, maybe no later than 2040, with a few marker events in there, he's saying, kind of get ready because enough of you are open to this that it might accelerate very quickly at a certain point and you might start really, truly realizing you're not alone.
And do you think that reality works in a certain way where these entities are all around us, but because of our perception, we can't see it at all?
Yeah. He said, when you do hone your frequencies, your senses get sharper to higher frequencies and you start seeing things that are around you all the time, that were there all the time, that you just didn't know were there. So he said that's one of the symptoms of getting closer to contact is you start seeing that there's actually quite a lot of UFO traffic around your planet that you can't necessarily see. Because there are things coming and going from one dimension to another, but that when your senses are sharper, you do start to pay attention to not only that, but that you start to also look into the veil of spirit, and you can start seeing things like guides and, you know, things like spirits and so on and so forth. So he said, those are symptoms of your senses getting closer to existing on the level of reality that they exist on.
Mm. What do you think, when we get to this point, what our world will look like with, you know, obviously working with the Galactic Federation? What do you think that would involve?
Well, at first, one of the things he has said is certainly there will be at a certain point a gift of a large amount of information that we may be missing about things like our history and stuff like that. They certainly will open up the possibility of us being able to understand their technologies, maybe, you know, visiting their ships, their worlds, and eventually perhaps becoming part of the Galactic Society. At a certain point, I don't know exactly when, relatively maybe farther in the future, he said, you know, you will also go out to other worlds. You'll become their UFOs. You will basically be helping them ascend or accelerate their understanding. So you'll kind of like join the club and be part and parcel of that. But I would imagine that's going to, you know, help us learn to erase famine and poverty and bigotry and all that kind of stuff as our barriers break down and we start mm-hmm. realizing that there's no reason to operate out of fear or lack or anything like that, because there's just enough for everyone if we stop limiting ourselves and restricting ourselves to what we believe is true about the universe and really understand what is true about the universe, which is there's amazing abundance for everyone. We just have to start shifting our perspective to be able to see that and to be able to experience that.
Yeah. And we've, you know, you mentioned the word true, which is kind of what I see. I'm always trying to look for the truth a lot of the time. It's quite hard to find, you know, logically, it's quite hard to find, I think. And through your, you know, these 40 years with Bashar, what have you learned about the purpose of the human experience and the truth behind it?
Well, from his perspective, I've begun to understand, and from other perspectives too, like studying near-death experience reports and things like that, and it all kind of dovetails together. Physical reality is a projection of our consciousness. It's a state of being we've chosen to experience for our own soul's growth, because there are things that you can experience in certain ways in the physical reality experience that you don't experience in spirit and vice versa. So this is a valid way to sort of challenge ourselves to kind of forget who we are as greater beings and then sort of relearn who we are, rediscover who we are from a new point of view, a new perspective. Because now it's all about the idea of transformation and change. You experience the change in a different way in a space-time reality like physical reality than you do in spirit. And so this gives us an opportunity to sort of explore different things that are temporary, that allow us to learn to choose things that are more conducive to our spirit's growth, to learn the difference of the polarities, to let go of things, to discover new aspects of our being. And this is how the universe and creation expands, according to him. The structure of existence never changes. It is what it is. But it's our relationship to it, our experience of it, that changes and allows existence to keep expanding, even though the core structure never actually changes. So physical reality is a choice we make to experience for a limited period of time, to basically explore things we can't explore in spirit.
So, and with this choice, is that something we make? Is it, you know, before, if we're talking about near-death experience or reincarnation, if you're making this choice before you enter the realm of physical reality, how is that choice made? Is it, you know, does it work along, right, you are now an Aquarius, you're going to have these traits, you're also going to go through this experience? Or
it can be that specific. It can be more general. Bashar sort of likened it to, like, look, you are a unique personality, you're a unique reflection of all that is of creation. That's your hallway. This person that you deem yourself to be in this life, that has this name and this appearance and these experiences, that's kind of like creating a choice, a hallway to be this being, because we're more than this, way more than this.
A little construct.
So this projection according to him, is it's a theme that you're exploring. It's an idea. It's a perspective that you're exploring. And it's like walking down a hallway. Now, he's saying that hallway, that being that you are, you could look at that as your destiny as a physical being. You still make that choice from free will and spirit to experience certain things as this persona. And so from the physical reality, that looks like that's your destiny. But you have free will within that destiny to how you're going to walk down that hallway. You can run, you can crawl, you can fly, you can laugh, you can jump, you can be happy, you can be sad, you can go forwards, backwards, side to side. You have the free will to engage in that in any way, shape, or form that you desire. But walk down that hallway, you will, because that's what you decided to be as this persona. So it kind of works hand in hand that you make a free will choice in spirit to limit yourself for a period of time, to experience a certain thing, to overcome certain challenges, to learn certain lessons that you then take back with you into spirit. And that helps you decide what you're going to do next. And it helps expand your relationship to existence, to creation.
And do you think Earth itself has certain, environment that are there other sort of types of, I want to say the word simulation, but other types of,
it's a simulation.
We're creating.
I think there are many other types. I think Earth is one type. And I think from Bashar's point of view, a lot of people here think, we're so backwards. We're so, much stuck in a kindergarten kind of thing. And he says, no, he says, really, because the Earth cycle is a very dense cycle and you can really truly forget what kind of a grand spirit you are. He said, it's kind of more like a master graduating class. You have made a choice that you are strong enough to be able to transform darkness into light, limitation into freedom, negative into positive. And he said, it's like you're in a master graduating class. So understand that you are that strong, you're that powerful, and that you have made this choice to really highly accelerate your growth. Because it's kind of like, he uses this rubber band analogy. It's like, when you pull a rubber band back, farther you pull it back, when you let it go, it flies that much farther in the other direction. So he's saying the deeper you choose to kind of go into the dark, when you finally let go, you'll fly that much faster and that much farther into the light. So you're using the idea of the density of the Earth experience to actually accelerate your growth as a spirit. When you finally get it and you get into that aha moment and you start aligning with the vibration of creation, he said, you will accelerate much faster than you otherwise normally would on a, let's say, less limiting planet or a less limiting dimension.
Yeah. And has he ever sort of used the analogy of how, in the forms, I've got quite an interest in zodiacs at the minute, I will admit, but the way that you go through the zodiacs, as in, Aquarius and Pisces would be at the end. Has he ever spoke about that?
Yeah, he looks at everything in physical reality, every technique, every tool, every discipline, all of that as what he sums up as permission slips. He's saying none of that, it's not that that controls you, it's that it reflects what it is you've chosen for this theme that you're exploring. So you can use those tools as reflective permission slips to give yourself permission to be more of who you are. So it's like you're using the mirror of physical reality, whether it's the idea of astrology or something else, to gauge what works for you, what allows you to give yourself permission to be more of who you are. Of course, you're the ultimate permission slip. You're giving yourself the permission to change. It's just that in physical reality, sometimes we need these symbols, these reflective symbols, to remind us of our themes, to help reflect to us what it is we've chosen to experience. Again, none of this controls us, but it gives us an opportunity to look into the mirror of physical reality and say, okay, that reminds me that I have this ability to get in touch with this aspect. And it gives me the opportunity to change myself in ways that I prefer. So he looks at everything in physical reality as literally a permission slip until we get to the point where we understand we are the permission slip and that we no longer necessarily need those sort of outside reflections. We just decide to change in the way that we prefer to change, regardless of what's going on outside.
Yeah. And these you know, such as constructs or zodiacs or cultures, as you said, he looks at all these things. Have they all been built in physical reality? Nothing has come from the outside of physical reality?
Well, it comes from the outside, from spirit, in the sense that we set that up.
Yeah. You know,
this is how we decided to experience the concept of physical reality. And here's all the tools and reflections and symbols that go with this particular experience of physical reality. So yeah, we set it up, if you want to say, from the outside, because again, this is just a projection of consciousness from his point of view. Mm. Physical reality is a real experience, but physically it's an illusion. So we're creating a part of our consciousness. He likens it literally to like saying, look, you are in spirit right now. You never leave spirit. That's your natural state. But part of you has agreed to sort of go into this dream. And this dream you're having is called physical reality. Mm-hmm. And you decide to stay in the dream until you're done with that dream. And then you wake up and you go, oh, right, this is who I actually am. And no matter how real that seemed in physical reality, that was just a dream. So now you add that experience to your overall essence, and you decide from there what you're going to experience next.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. I know he also has a toolkit of his own. I think it's the Five Laws of Creation.
The Five Laws. And
there's another one as well.
He talks about that, but he's also talking about the five principles of how reality works. The formula, as he calls it, because he's breaking it down literally into a toolkit. He's saying, look, you know, a lot of things have been sort of ambiguous and nebulous and mysterious to you about metaphysical and spiritual concepts for quite a long time. So what I like about his information and how practical and, no pun intended, down to earth it is, is that he's saying, this is how physical reality works. This is how you create your experience. Here's the toolkit. It contains this, 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 and this. And if you actually just use this like an instruction manual for how reality works, it will work to your advantage in exactly the same way as if you want to know how any machine works, you follow the instructions. And if you follow the instructions correctly, the machine works to your advantage. He says he doesn't mean to make that sound cold, but he's just basically saying, look, there is a structure to existence. We have evolved to the point where we understand this structure. We are now giving you the information of the instruction manual. Don't add any instructions to it. Don't leave any instructions out, and it'll work perfectly fine, because this is what we have learned is how reality works and how you can create the reality you prefer. So use it, don't use it, that's up to you. Mm-hmm. You're using it anyway. It's just that we're helping you become aware of how to use it more efficiently, so that it can work to your advantage instead of to your disadvantage, is basically the way he breaks things down and says, look, it's a distillation, it's an instruction manual, follow it or don't, that's up to you.
And how old is Bashar and his civilization or his experience? As you said earlier as well, you may be a split soul. I know he's spoken about oversouls as well, but
yeah, I wouldn't call it a split soul. I would just call it that there is a soul connection. I mean, again, there are linear terms that he kind of
I think says, I just well, made that up, to be honest.
Yeah, it's okay. That's what makes it understandable to us, because of the way we think in physical terms. And that's fine. We can use any term we want. He's just saying, look, here's the real mechanism. And there's a difference between the way the mechanism is structured and the way you experience it. A stupidly simple example would be, you know, we still say sunset, even though we know the sun doesn't set. We know that it's because of the Earth's revolution that we see the rising and setting of the sun. But we still use the word sunset because that's how it appears to us. Mm. So that's why all he's trying to say is there's a big difference between the experience, sunset, and the mechanism, the revolution of the Earth, the spinning of the Earth, that creates the illusion of the sun setting. So it's much like that in physical terms, where we have certain definitions that have been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years, that can be misleading as to why that actually happens. So one of the things I really appreciate about his information is he provides definitions of the actual mechanism underlying the experience you're having, whether physical or metaphysical, and says it's fine to keep using the normal terms, but just understand that thinking that the experience is a description of the reality is not necessarily so. here's the reality, here's the mechanism that underlies the experience. If you understand the difference between the two, then you can go forward in balance and you can expand and evolve beyond the definition that might be keeping you in a limited sense of knowledge about what's actually happening. So the tools he delivers are literally like a toolkit. Here's the principles, follow them, you'll get this result. And again, because people have come back to me over the years and said, you know, I applied this information to this situation in my life and it changed everything. That's what keeps me going, because I know from my own experience and from the feedback I get from people that the information actually works, regardless of where it's coming from.
Yeah. And has he ever spoken on topics of sort of male and female partnerships and whether we're sort of going into that in the right way now, or how they're meant to work in this reality?
Well, he says all relationships, no matter what form they take, are really for the purpose of each person in the relationship helping the other or others become more of who they truly are, reflecting to them what experiences, what opportunities, what challenges they need in order to become supported as who they truly are, discover their true self. So if everyone in a relationship is doing that for everyone else, whether they know it or not, whether positively or negatively, how you use that information to improve yourself, to become more of who you truly are in your essence, in your core, then that relationship is functioning properly. But you can also decide that relationships might have a limited life and you can change them. You can, you know, go to other relationships that you feel are more vibrationally correct for you. It depends on how honest you are with yourself and how honest you are in your communication with other people in the relationship about what's going on in the relationship, because people can choose to kind of be oblivious as to what's happening, and they may impose a societal structure on a relationship thinking, oh, well, because I feel this way, it must mean this. And he's saying, you don't know what a relationship is actually for ultimately, or what form it's going to take. And the strength of the attraction of a relationship does not tell you why the relationship is necessarily there, because you might just need to learn something for a month and then it's over, you know, no matter how strong you felt about that relationship going into it. So he's saying, try to drop your assumptions and insistences on why you think the relationship is in your life and just let it be what it is. Let it show you why it's there and go with that flow. Some of them will last a lifetime. Some of them will not. But if you use the relationship honestly and let it be what it is, then that will allow the relationship to serve the true purpose of why that relationship is happening. And everyone will get the benefit they need ultimately out of that relationship, no matter what form it takes.
Yeah, there's a saying that's some for a season, some for a reason, some for a lifetime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we, you know, our society teaches us to impose all sorts of assumptions on that. That gets us into trouble, because then we're saying, well, this didn't happen. Why didn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's because you're not allowing the relationship to be what it really is.
But yeah.
Anytime you do allow it to be what it is, it will usually flow. You usually get a benefit out of it. And you will, in a sense, remain connected to that person for the rest of your life in a certain way, even if you're never physically together, because you have allowed the relationship to serve you and you have served them in the way that you both agreed that that service and that relationship should serve you.
Mm. Yeah, I think something I've learned over the years is definitely attachment. Like how, like a lot of what you said today is letting go. And, you know, once you don't sort of put, okay, this is going to be that and that's the way it's going to be, you have no disappointment after. Exactly. You're usually pretty happy. So
yeah. And again, you know, it's all about the definitions we impose on things. And I mean, even look at the word disappointment. Bashar is saying, just listen to that. You are literally disappointing yourself from your position of power. You know, don't disappoint yourself, appoint yourself to the position of power and let everyone be equal in that sense and discover what they need to discover.
Yeah. Has he ever spoken about, you know, as this being a simulation, has he ever spoken about a creator of the simulation or how it is created? Is it all through consciousness and all our minds in the sense?
Yeah, it's all through consciousness. It's all through agreement. It's all through choice. It's our simulation. It's not coming from outside. It's our simulation. Mm. We've agreed to create this physical reality experience. It's a projection of our consciousness. It's a projection of our collective agreement, our individual agreements. It's all synchronicity. It's all happening as an orchestration. Nothing is an accident in that sense. So whatever we experience could be more or less having to do with what we need. You can participate in an event and maybe someone else is getting more out of it than you are, but you're still there helping to support the existence of that event, of that orchestration, so that someone else can get something out of it. It may not have that much to do with you in the overall sense of meaning, but then sometimes it's for you. You know, you're joining something and you're going to get a lot out of it because you've agreed to join this particular creation, this projection, to get what you need out of it. So it's all an orchestration, it's all synchronicity, but the simulation is our simulation. It's not being imposed on us. It's being created by us from one level or another.
Where do you think that leaves, you know, does that still entail the whole story of the simulation in a sense, not to call it a story of the simulation, but as in, you know, from the Big Bang, the beginning of time, you know, if you're talking in evolution, you know, mushrooms, you know, does it still have that?
All of it. Because again, remember, from the highest point of view, there is no time. Everything's happening now. Mm. Everything is happening right now. So time, as someone once said, is what keeps everything from happening all at once. And to that, there's truth in that. It all exists. It all exists. But we've created these different frequencies within our consciousness to create this concept of separation and difference and so on and so forth. So we have all the different reflections that we can explore. I mean, again, another analogy Bashar has sometimes used is, think about standing in the center of a hall of mirrors. You're seeing reflections of yourself from every possible angle. In reality, all those reflections are conscious because they're all expressions of your consciousness. So every single thing that's happening in physical reality is just another angle, another perspective of what exists dead center. So it's the, what do you want to call it? God, goddess, one, all that is. Mm. All of us and all this are just reflections of it. And the way we experience that in a physical sense is it's different frequencies. And the different frequencies is what makes things different, because it's all the same stuff. It's all made out of the same consciousness. And it has to have a slightly different vibration in order to be seen or experienced as something other than this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what consciousness is. Consciousness is self-awareness. It's the awareness of the self because there is something that is not the self or appears to not be the self. If you don't have that comparison, you don't have that reflection, there is no awareness, because whatever is just homogeneous has no experience. There's nothing to compare itself to. There's nothing to be aware of. But as soon as that part of the one has a reflection of something that could be not it, could be other than it, then you have self-awareness. So it's that reflective quality that is just, for again, in a linear sense, exploding outward, expanding outward infinitely, because it's just like reflective mirrors going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to infinity. Mm. That's the way physical reality and all dimensions are structured and express the idea of the one.
And do you think, I'm not sure, I haven't seen any clips if he's ever spoken about this, but does that mean if everything is happening now, even though we're in this timeline, does that mean if you were to enter the physical reality or experience it, can you experience it in any timeline?
Yes.
Like a video game, you can just go, I'm going to play Egyptian timeline right now.
Exactly. I've learned this from this experience. Now I'm going to learn this from that experience. And it might just be that from the physical point of view, the experience you already had actually comes before, you know, or after, or some other, you know, it's all there. It's all there. So it doesn't have to be linear when you're making those choices, and you will inject yourself into, if you inject yourself into a linear experience, it will fall in whatever timeline it needs to give you that experience. It doesn't matter if you had this life and then you have one that's in the past and then you have another one that's in the future and then you go back to the past again. It's all here right now. So yeah, it can be in any order you need it to be.
And do you think through all these different timelines, maybe that they've, you know, we're at this timeline now is, I'm trying to not... There's so many thoughts in my head. I'm trying to get it out in the right way. But
they're all happening at once.
Yeah, literally. Do you think that, so the way that the theme works, it's like, okay, so I want to go into, you know, the 2000s, and I want to see where First Contact is going to happen. Like, is that, you know, Egyptians, how it works in that kind of way, you know?
Sure. We can. You can, again, you can make the choices. You're free to choose. That's our greatest power, the freedom to choose from any level. And yes, there are certain, let's just say, limitations and borders we placed on ourselves to have a physical experience. And so some choices may be temporarily off the table until we finish this theme. But from a spirit level, it's much more expanded. So yeah, you can say, okay, you know, my experience, I want to experience a life where there's contact from extraterrestrials, or I want to experience a life where, you know, I'm digging in the dirt for my life because I want to understand physical labor. I want to understand what that feels like. You know, or I'm have a life as a gardener, or, you know, I have a life as this and that, or I have a life as a spaceship pilot. I mean, it's really endless. That it's really up to you as to what you think you need or feel you need to experience as a being, as a soul, you know?
And I know you spoke, you said a little bit earlier that you looked into near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. So could you tell me a little bit about that? And sort of, I'm interested in sort of the DMT worlds as well, you know, where an astral projection, where we leave the physical body. What is your experiences through death?
Well, again, it's to me the idea that there are different frequencies and different levels. And in a sense, you could almost say, you know, it's much more of a gradation from physical to non-physical reality, where you can have something that's very close to being physical but isn't. And I would call that like the lower astral vibration, where you're shifting, you know, slightly into the spirit, but you're not actually going all the way. And I think near-death experiences are sort of similar to that. They might be a little bit on a different frequency than an astral experience because they're experiencing certain things that are more likely to be experienced by a more spirit level, but then they come back. So they retain some of that information, which I think is, again, just slightly below someone actually dying and continuing on into spirit. So I think there are gradations of frequency that allow us to sort of dip our toes back up into higher frequencies where we, you know, came from. So it's just a matter of, you know, what serves you, what you're interested in, where you're kind of exploring, what you bring back to help you evolve, help others evolve, be of service to others, and so on and so forth. And so all this information to me is on a spectrum of frequencies that allow us to understand that we are more than just physical beings. So I think all of that information can be utilized to help us evolve. And Bashar has said, you know, they have evolved in a way that allows them to be now what he calls quasi-physical. They have elements of spirit. They have elements of physical beings. So it's kind of like, I think where we're headed evolutionarily is to kind of be this halfway being where we have the ability to really extend our knowledge and our consciousness into spirit, but at the same time, bring that down to earth and go into what people have referred to as a fourth density physical reality, which is a much higher level of physical experience that's more positive, more integrated, and allow us to experience the refined version of physical reality evolutionarily, collectively as a species, before we decide, okay, we don't need this experience anymore at all. We'll let someone else do this now. So I think that explains what you
were asking. No, and do you think sort of, I've heard Bashar talk in a way about how, you know, the experiences of Earth is, you know, to find your passion, creativity. It sounds a little bit like that Bashar's is more to evolve. I mean, essentially, well, we evolve from here. Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. Yeah, because he's explaining, you know, why is it important? See, that's the thing that's different about him to some degree. Is, you know, we've heard for a long time, it's like, you know, act on your passion, follow your bliss, live your dreams. But why? Why is that important? Well, he's basically explaining that in physical terms, saying, look, if you're experiencing yourself as a physical being, what's guiding you? You have spirit guides, you have your own higher mind that's still in spirit, the portion of you that's still there. He's saying that portion of you in spirit communicates and guides you through energy, through frequency, through vibration. It's an energy language because it's not physical. You translate that energy message from the higher mind bodily as the sensation called passion, creativity, love, attraction. So when you feel that something contains more passion, more excitement, more attractiveness than anything else, you're getting the message from your higher mind that this is your next step. This is your path. This is who you are. But you have to answer with physical action, because physical actions are the language of physical reality, not words. Words can help, but physical actions let the higher mind know, okay, I heard you. You're telling me this thing has more excitement, more attractiveness, more passion in it than anything else. You're telling me this is who I am. This is the next step. This is the direction to go in. I heard you, and I'm proving I heard you by being willing to act on it. And the way you act on it, according to Bashar, is, again, you take it as far as you can till you can take it no further. When the excitement wanes, you make sure you're not the one dampening that excitement with your negative belief systems or fear-based belief systems. But if it wanes naturally, let it. And then look around, what's the next thing that is more exciting than any other choice? And it doesn't have to be, you know, this big career thing. It can be simple things, everyday things. Just act on them first, and it will lead you where you need to be. And if you act on them, this is the third principle, with no assumption, no insistence on what the outcome is supposed to be, you will wind up where you need to be. You'll let the flow take you. And then you stay in a positive state no matter what manifests, because even if something manifests that you objectively don't find compatible, it's still there for a reason. And if you learn that it's there for a reason and stay in a positive state, you can get a benefit from it, even if it's something you don't prefer. And then you start examining your belief systems and continue letting go of the things that are not relevant for you, that don't work for you, that are negative and fear-based, that are not truly who you really are as a spirit. Those five things, acting on your passion, taking it as far as you can, no assumption, no insistence, staying in a positive state, and examining your belief systems, to him, that is literally a distillation of how you create your physical reality experience. And if you do it consciously and apply it positively, said you will find that your reality will start to express more of the synchronicity. You become more aware of the synchronicity that exists in physical reality. You'll get it to start happening magically, consciously. You'll start seeing things in a more connective and positive and associative way, and you'll start having a better experience of life. You'll start being who you truly are, and the physical reality will reflect that to you. The catch is simply that because there is space and time here, there can be a time lag. We can test ourselves. We can say, okay, I'm going to go into this. I'm going to follow the formula. And then people fall into this, well, I didn't expect that to happen. That's not what I wanted to happen. Mm-hmm. And they react negatively to it. And that is testing yourself to see, are you going to base your state of being on what's happening outside? Or are you going to base your state of being on what you prefer anyway, regardless of what's happening outside? Because what is outside will not change if you're still reacting the same old way. Mm-hmm. The true measure of change is not whether the outside changes first. It's whether you change in response to what's happening, even if the outside still looks the same as it did before. Then you have truly changed, and then the outside can change. He often uses the analogy of literally a mirror. If you look at the mirror and your face is frowning, the expression on your face in the mirror will never change before you change your expression on your face. The mirror reflection cannot smile before you do. So if you still react the same way to things that are unexpected in a negative sense, the outside is never going to be anything other than that, because that's what you're putting out. Mm. What you get back is what you put out. So you have to decide, you know what? I don't care what I'm seeing here. I know that it's there for a reason. How can I use this in a positive way? How can I learn from it? How can I stay in a positive state? So on the most simplistic level, manifesting something you don't prefer, at the very least, gives you a clearer idea by contrast of what you do prefer. And that is a positive way to use what you don't prefer. And when you use it that way and get clear, it's like, thank you for manifesting what I don't prefer, because now I really see what I do prefer. It's much clearer now. And that's a positive state of being, and that's a positive way to use what you don't prefer. And that way, by staying in that positive state, you might even be able to help others that way by being a living example of how to respond to things in a more positive and constructive way that gives them the opportunity to also go, you know, I could look at things that way too, and I could have a better life by doing so. And it does work. It does work, but you have to prove it to yourself. I can't prove it to you, neither can Bashar. You have to prove that the information works, because he's describing the way we create our reality already. It's just that he's helping us become more conscious of how we're doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it is. You can tell people information, but at the end of the day, they only realize through their own mistake or going through it. And I think what I've noticed a lot is, you know, the universe, it will just kind of, or however you want to put it, you know, you could have an altercation or you can have something that isn't right. And then if you don't pass that, say, test, or whether it's bad or good, it doesn't really matter. But if you haven't evolved from that situation will come up again, nearly in the same form. And I'm like, this is mad.
Exactly. Because again, you're exploring a theme. Mm-hmm. And the greatest challenges you face in your life are usually reflective of the themes you're exploring. So until you kind of get the point, until you get the lesson, until you respond differently, you haven't learned anything. You haven't changed your ability to go beyond to the next, you know, challenge in the theme, because you're still stuck at this one because you're not letting it serve you in a way that it could serve you. So, yeah.
I've also heard him talk about parallel realities. Mm-hmm. How does that work in a sense of, say, this is my reality now? Do I have a parallel reality to this, Ryan? Or is it that there are many, many realities that I will, you know, if I choose to go to the desk or the door?
Yeah, different versions of you will do different things in the different realities. Now, those are their own people. Even if they may look a lot like you, they're their own people in their own reality. But see, that's what I'm saying. Consciousness can explore a multitude of things simultaneously, and does. In a sense, that's what parallel realities are. It's all the options being explored simultaneously, but separated by frequency from our point of view, because we can only handle one reality at a time. Now, we're shifting through parallel realities all the time, according to Bashar. In a sense, that's what time is. He's saying time is a side effect of our consciousness actually shifting through different parallel realities that are so similar, yet they are completely different. It's almost like an animation experience where, you know, you have 24 frames a second that creates the illusion of movement on a movie screen in a film strip. He's saying physical reality is actually like that. You're actually shifting billions of times per second through different frames, and you're going through different parallel realities, but all the parallel realities are being experienced simultaneously by some level of you. And if that means you have, for lack of a better term, fragmented yourself as a greater being into a billion different versions of Ryan or a billion different versions of Daryl to experience these themes simultaneously, then that's what parallel realities are. They're separated by the frequency into different apparent timelines so that the greater being can experience all these things at once, because there is only now in which to experience things.
Yeah, I'm going to have to absorb that one.
I know. It's sometimes challenging for us to think multidimensionally, but this is kind of one of the things that has sort of rubbed
off. Because you
feel
you're so here, that's it. You know, you're so attached to this body. You know, with there being a theme and everything else, is there like a waiver that says, look, you're going to do all this, but you're going to have absolutely no memory of what happened or where you're from?
In this reality, yeah. Like I said earlier, it's kind of like you forget who you are so you can remember who you are from a new point of view. Mm. It's just sort of like hitting a reset button. You know, okay, I want to have a new experience. I don't want to know what the old experience was. I don't want to have influence that way. I want to have a completely different experience. And in some ways, you have to kind of limit your awareness of the greater self and the other experiences in order to have a unique experience. Mm. Now, as we develop and as we grow, people are allowing themselves to also go to a thematic level where they can start allowing other experiences to bleed through. And it creates now a new theme, a new compound experience. So I think this is why some people are now starting to, or children are even coming in, remembering what we call past lives and all this kind of stuff, is because our consciousness can handle more than one reality experience simultaneously. We can integrate that now. that's a new theme in our evolution, in our reality, is, okay, now we can accept the idea that there are parallel realities. Now we can accept the idea that there are other portions of ourselves going on in different places. Now we can accept the idea that there are other life forms in the universe that are connected to us. This is the new paradigm. These are the new themes we are exploring.
And, you know, we're just talking about the human experience, but within Earth, are there many other, you know, obviously, you can consciousness take on the form of a tree in the way, is every living thing here a part of the theme?
Yes. There is nothing but consciousness. Everything is made of consciousness. Mm. Trees, rocks, animals, whatever. Everything is consciousness. It may have a different way of expressing that consciousness. It may have a different way of expressing self-awareness that we don't even recognize as self-awareness, but it is. It's all consciousness. It's all that is experiencing itself in all the ways it's possible to do so. Mm. Everything is made of consciousness. Everything. The wall is made of consciousness. The chair you're sitting in is made of consciousness. Mm. It's all a projection of consciousness.
Yeah, I like Alan Watts says, you know, that, that wood and metal is the same thing. It's still doing the same dance. It's still the same music underneath what it is.
Exactly. So yeah, it's all made out of the same stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just that at different frequencies, it looks like different stuff.
Yeah, of course, of course. Well, there's one question I ask. It's my final question to every guest that comes on the show. I think, you know, it's something you're going to be able to answer tremendously, not to put it too much, but it's what is reality to you?
Well, reality is the experience you're having. It's whatever you have deemed the reflection is you need at this particular moment. It's experience. It's an experience of whatever frequency is correct for who you are at this particular moment. It all comes down to what experience are you having. That's reality. And it can be in many different forms. It can be physical, non-physical, other dimensional, whatever. Reality is what you experience it to be. It is an experience.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate having the opportunity to share this information.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And do you have anything you want to shout out? Anything you've got coming up? I know you've been working on a lot of projects.
Sure. I mean, if people want to explore more of what Bashar himself has actually brought through, they can go to bashar.org, bashar.org, to see, you know, and access dozens and dozens and dozens of recordings of the seminars and sessions that we've done over the last several decades. If they want to see what I'm doing specifically in my own pursuit of my passion, they can go to darrylanka.com, darrylanka.com, where they can learn about films I've made, books I've written. They can learn about the new escape room that my wife and I are creating in Los Angeles. So, they can investigate all of that if they wish.
Amazing. And these sessions you do with Bashar, how long are they? When you're at an event, I mean.
Yeah, well, it depends on the event, but we have regular monthly Zoom sessions that we do that last a couple of hours, I believe.
Yeah.
So they can always, again, find the schedule for those particular
Zooms great.
At bashar.org.
That's what I used to found so fascinating was how many questions were thrown at Bashar, and they can be from any angle, and it's just the answers were always so amazing to listen to. So yeah, thank you so much. It's been amazing.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.